listening to the Nerds Assemble podcast.
Welcome to episode 196 of the Nerds Assemble podcast. I'm Emily.
I'm Paul.
I'm Paul, aka Cookie.
And I'm Paul, aka Retroid.
You can find notes for this episode over at www.nerdsassemble.co.uk.
That's three W's in that.
Yeah, you probably get away without the W's these days. True. You can tweet us at nerdspodcast, and if for some stupidly crazy reason you want to email us, you could do so at contact@nerdsassemble.co.uk. This episode is also available on iTunes and Stitcher if you're listening via a different method and you want to, you know, get via those as well. So this week we were going to, well, usual hunting ground for topics to discuss, but there's been one thing that's been pissing me off for a long time. And then last week it just kind of fucking boiled over. And that is the IP Act, which we previously referred to as the IP Bill and Snooper's Child, but it actually did get passed by the UK government in November of last year. The IP Act is, well, actually it was December 2016, but the Investigatory Powers Act, aka the Snooper's Charter, is a wide range of reforms of surveillance powers for government agencies, secret services, intelligence agencies, police, whatnot, being able to basically snoop on everyone who happens to be using the internet in the United Kingdom.
And occasionally elsewhere.
What perhaps made this particularly unpalatable after news last week was that proposals for encryption backdoors planned by the UK government, and it's such an extension of internet surveillance. The plans for this were leaked last week. And offers a worrying picture for privacy and security for UK internet users in the coming years, should ISPs and various other elements involved in providing internet access decide to comply with the government and its requests. Anybody want to take the floor?
So, how long until it's no longer just the UK government that's spying on us?
Well, that's the thing, because the kind of backdoors that the government's talking about and the amount of access that would be available means that it wouldn't just be government agencies, the police, secret intelligence services, etc., who would potentially have access if the access keys, essentially, for all of this were to somehow get leaked or stolen by the governments of other nations or hackers, criminals. You know, that means that the public's, you know, say everyone running their internet through TalkTalk could be at risk, because it would be different access for different ISPs, and it'll be the big ones that are especially affected. This is only a super bad problem for you if you don't run most of your internet traffic over a virtual private network, which is most of the general population. They don't, most people do not use a VPN for anything.
Yep.
I don't.
I've been using VPN increasingly since the IP Act was passed last year, and now I'm pretty much using VPN almost all the time when I'm connecting to the internet via my phone, all the various laptops that I have access to. And I actually changed VPN providers today just to make things a little bit more secure for myself. Because
how easy is it set up?
It really depends on the provider you go with, and the operating systems or devices that you're trying to connect, basically, via VPN. Like, for a lot of systems, if they haven't got like a graphic user interface kind of set up for you to just run a program and configure tick boxes and everything, they'll use on other platforms they'll use stuff like OpenVPN,
mm-hmm.
which is is more of a sort of universal standard, which helps to connect to their servers so that you can run your VPN connection through basically a general kind of series of protocols. But when I switched, I wanted something that was easily configurable, so I had a GUI for Linux as well as Windows. I wasn't so worried about the Android front, but I wanted it for Android. And then I found a particular provider that had apps for Windows, but also the Debian distro of Linux, which my new Linux installs a fork of, because it's Linux Mint. And then for Android, it offers an OpenVPN sort of version. So basically, you download an OpenVPN app from Google Play, and then you configure it as per instructions from your VPN provider. And it's complicated. It's not easy stuff at all. I mean, the VPN provider I was with previously, that was easier to use, but the issue was that there, and I'm probably going to keep a subscription to them just as a sort of backup, but the issue was then was that they were Canadian, that's Tunnel Bear, and Canada's a Five Eyes territory, which affects how information gets passed from them to other nation states. The UK is also a Five Eyes territory, as are the United States, and I believe Australia, I want to say. I'm just looking at privacytools.io. Privacytools. What was it called again? Privacy Tools. There's this really cool site that basically kind of talks about all the stuff you could do to limit your risk for having shit exposed online. So Five Eyes countries are Australia, Canada, New Zealand, the United Kingdom, and the United States of America.
So what do Five Eyes mean?
Basically, the UK-USA agreement, which is what the Five Eyes is based on, is an agreement between the UK, US, Australia, Canada, and New Zealand to cooperatively collect, analyse, and share intelligence. Members of this group, known as the Five Eyes, focus on gathering and analysing intelligence from different parts of the world. While Five Eyes countries have agreed to not spy on each other as adversaries, leaks by Snowden have revealed that some Five Eyes members monitor each other's citizens and share intelligence to avoid breaking domestic laws that prohibit them from spying on their own citizens. So say there's the UK government wants to spy on a member of, a British citizen. Mm-hmm. And the law says they can't do that because there hasn't been enough proof of blah, blah, this. All they got to do is go talk to their American counterparts, strike a deal and be like, oi, can you get some dirt on this person? And in theory, whatever US department they've decided to talk to about that, State Department or whatever, or maybe Department of Justice, whoever, they would, hand over this nice bit of info if they've managed to find it.
So basically it sounds like a circumvention.
Yeah. The VPN provider I went with in the end is a 14 Eyes territory, which isn't so bad, and they're less likely to sort of cooperate with that kind of thing. But basically, the main thing is to avoid most US and UK based services if you want your information to remain secure a lot of the time.
Well,
yeah.
Now,
going back to the IP Act.
Yeah, the main thing is, of course, the very old, argument that if you're not doing anything wrong, you've got nothing to fear. So why should people bother with this?
Okay, so shall I use my analogy that I posted?
I that's a good analogy. So,
okay, yeah. Okay, so
it's very graphic.
It's very graphic. If you do not like poop being talked about, in colloquial terms or otherwise, you do not want to listen to the next couple of minutes. So basically, I kind of made up an analogy earlier, which I put on my personal private-ish Facebook, that basically So you may think you have nothing to hide, but the simple fact of the matter is that everyone has something to hide when it comes to their online activities, because what you do online reveals a great deal about yourself. So the IP Act treats your online activity like you don't have a right to keep it private. It's the equivalent of the government being able to poke its head around the toilet door whenever you're taking a shit. They may not know the colour of your shit, but they will know how it smells, when you did it, and how long it took you to take it. But unless, of course, you're browsing, that's if you're browsing with HTTPS, you know, with SSL encryption. If the site you're going onto is just regular HTTP site, that is the equivalent, actually, of going now for a shit on a toilet that is completely see-through, so the government will see your shit quite happily. And that is pretty much what the IP Act enables. I mean, it's stuff technically that GCHQ was slyly doing, like, on the, you know, without any legislation to kind of keep them in check previously.
Yeah, but now it's... Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, now it's go ahead and also legitimised for other government agencies. You know, it's not just GCHQ is going to have access to this shit. It's a whole swathe of government departments, basically.
What strikes me about all this kind of thing is it dwells on the technophobia of the general public. And most of the time, the utter cluelessness when it comes to technology of the people who write this legislation or want it in the first place. Because if this was real world, you'd be talking about, you know, the Stasi of East Germany, or, you know, the intelligence network of the KGB in, you know, Soviet era Russia, where they'd be keeping track of who you are, where you live, who you mingle with, what you spend your time doing, you know, all that kind of thing, just so if at any point they decide that they don't like people who, you know, associate with, you know, with certain other people, they can just swoop in and grab people en masse.
I mean, obviously we're concentrating at the moment on the privacy aspect, but as has been found with, like, private companies, they sell your data. So what exactly is to stop the government from selling your data?
Well, yeah, because they might make an amendment later on that's like, oh yeah, we'll you know, we're going to sell this data to insurance companies or employers or whatever, you know, and creepily so, certainly as a risk for democracy. Well, I believe MPs are exempt under the Act, technically, as it stands. If you're not, if you obviously say you wanted to run yourself as an MP in the future, well, potentially your opponents, those who want to stand against you or stop you from getting your, you know, seat as an MP, could have access, if they know the right people, and manage to, you know, and this is obviously in of itself being a criminal act, because you shouldn't be able to gain somebody's info from this aspect, but the risk is that obviously people may be unscrupulous and dicks and do it anyway. They might gain access to your internet history and find something that is embarrassing, but is not illegal, but would obviously, and would not probably affect your ability to run as an MP. But, you know, would, if publicly revealed, make it less likely for voters to vote for you. So it might be that you have an, I don't know, like, you know, a particular kink that is not particularly, you know, terrible or anything, but it gets revealed and suddenly people don't want to vote for you.
Or say, for example, if somebody's actually gone through mental health services and suddenly running, people will bring up the mental health issue as a way to, you know, stop you.
Or if they've been searching a lot about stuff to do with sexuality or gender, and perhaps the wider public doesn't know that somebody's, I don't know, maybe transitioned or something, but unfortunately their internet history could reveal this. There we go again.
Yeah. I mean, all you have to do to think about why this is a fucking awful idea is think of the UK tabloid press.
Oh, God.
And the amount of time they will, you know, they'll go after someone over something which isn't technically illegal.
Yeah.
But it's enough to smear with, isn't it? And also, think of the, you know, the recent, was it Gina Miller?
Yes.
Who brought the, you know, for anyone who doesn't know, she's the person who brought a case against Theresa May's government over the, you know, the triggering of Brexit, because Theresa May wanted to do it pretty much just as an executive act, which is kind of illegal under British law, you know, going back centuries, going back to, you know, the Civil War and the sovereignty of, you know, Parliament, you know, all that kind of thing. And look at how, especially papers like the Daily Mail and the Express went after her for that, for wanting the government of the day to adhere to British law, where they said, you know, they called the judges traitors.
Hmm.
And they were banging. There was a lord who offered several thousand pounds to the first person to run her over.
Yeah. Christ. I mean, it's not just that, but I mean, if you, because obviously this data collection is going to be who, what, when, where, how, so you're going to know the location and, like, potential, like, address and stuff of people like that. So that means that if you get access to that information, you can do anything to them, which is incredibly worrying.
I just think it's, well, having, you know, lived through the, you know, the burst of, you know, Tory censoriousness and bullshit in the 80s and 90s, I was kind of just waiting for them to do this, and this is a true return to form. It's just, they're wanting these powers because they want them, not because they need them. It's
not, you know, because they're particularly effective.
Exactly. No. It's about wanting to know more about your population and spying on them. The number of times there's been, say, well, you know, one of the reasons, one of the main reasons they give for, you know, crap like this is terrorism.
Yeah.
Hmm.
Of course, one of the great ironies, of course, with all of this kind of like, oh, we're essentially evading people's privacy, or in a sense giving themselves a open day on just invading anyone's privacy, especially with the new proposals that were leaked last week, which sets sort of like demands on larger internet service providers to be able to provide real-time access to the communications of up to 10,000 people or subjects at a time. So basically, like, the government would be able to go in and sniff at your, look at your real-time traffic with the powers that they're currently trying to give themselves. Great irony, all of this is that technically, when you think about it, this all breaks human rights law. That thing the Tories fucking hate. They hate human rights, and under both, I think, the Geneva Convention and certainly the European human rights laws, everyone has a right to privacy.
Yeah.
And the thing, is that, I mean, they're talking about, I mean, apart from the fact that big data analytics isn't as good as it could be for looking for trends among traffic data as it is, like, one of the best ways, I would say, in terms of trying to detect security threats, A, isn't to be looking on the regular web, which is where most of the general population are at. It's to be looking on the dark web. And the thing is, though, is that in order to access the dark web, you're already going to be using something like Tor, and you're already going to be clouding your internet use in order to use Tor. Like, it's not nakedly browsing. And that's why there's rumours that anyone who downloads Tor or uses Tor is probably on a list with a couple of government agencies around the world.
Yeah, which is just, oh, for fuck's sake, really?
Yeah. But the thing is that the dark web is where the nasty shit really goes down. You know, the nasty drug stuff, the nasty arms stuff, the nasty trafficking stuff, the nasty porn stuff, the nasty terrorism stuff. You know.
But Emily, according to the Daily Mail, that's just all on Google. Yes, exactly.
Well, actually, I've stopped using Google for most of my searches at the moment. I'm using DuckDuckGo, but, you know.
I would stop using Google for some of my searches. Not because, you know, I'm, you know, searching for anything dodgy on there, but because a lot of the time, it's giving me shit results.
Yeah, it has actually gotten pretty bad for accuracy lately.
I will type in something very, very specific that I want. Like, for example, LM1887 PAL NTSC video encoder chip IC compatibility with the GEA2000 IC PAL NTSC video encoder chip from RGB to composite. And it'll come up with anything but. That's it. Thanks, Google, you useless git.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I found that for about the last year or so, Google has been getting increasingly less useful and specific. DuckDuckGo is, I've tried using it, because I downloaded, you know, Opera, you know, trying out different browsers, and that's the default in there. And, yeah, that was being even less useful.
And I've had quite a bit of success with it, like when I was, because I was using it for fixing stuff to do with my Mint install last week, and I was definitely getting somewhere.
I think it's because I'm looking for very, very, very specific information about, you know, things, and I think it's just getting, you know, it can't be that specific.
Yeah.
You mean something more generalized, and it's like, no, I really am being that specific. I'm looking for very specific information about things.
Well, I mean, chances are, you know, Google obviously prides itself on the amount of hits that it will get. So if it is something too specific, then it will probably automatically, you know, kind of accommodate broader things in order to increase the amount of hits that it gives you.
I think I just want to go back to the specifics of the stuff that got leaked last week. In regards to further changes to the IP Act, which, as I said, was passed last December. So the government is currently conducting sort of behind the doors closed consultation with select sort of telecommunications providers and ISPs who make up the technical advisory board for this sort of thing. So we've got B, Sky B, BT, Cable and Wireless, O2, Virgin Media and Vodafone. But of the proposals which were leaked to the Open Rights Group, it's sections 8 and 9 specifically, which are super problematic. So 8 requires relevant telecommunications operators to, and this is a quote, to provide and maintain the capability to disclose, where practicable, the content of communications or secondary data in an intelligible form and to remove electronic protection applied by or on behalf of the telecommunications operator to the communications or data, or to permit the person to whom the warrant is addressed to remove such electronic protection. So, if you use a firewall provided by your ISP on your connection, with that, they'd be allowed to lift the firewall off of your connection. And one assumes, potentially, use any backdoors to interfere, one assumes, with ISP-provided router modems. But would that not be a fair assessment on that? As well as obviously looking at stuff at their level in terms of admin access, you know, so you sort of like, you know, in their data centers where everything's passing through.
That kind of reminds me, in a roundabout way, an example of the reporting on tech and, you know, the breaching of privacy and the actual practicality of it. Was it Samsung TVs? I don't want to get in trouble with that.
Smart TVs are generally a risky.
Yeah, but there was a specific brand which one of the security leaks, one of the recent dumps of tools, mentioned that, you know, could be used for spying because it's a smart TV and because it has a video and a microphone. And you know, the reporting on it was, oh, it allows the NSA and Homeland Security, etc., to listen in, to converse. I actually read about what it does. What the tool did was it had to be put on a pen drive. and plugged into the television set itself, physically plugged into the actual television set in question, and then it would upload a hacked firmware, which would make the TV pretend it had gone into standby, but in fact would be recording, you know, over the microphone.
So there, the bigger risk is warehouses where these things are stored, and if someone wants to get a bit creative.
I just loved the idea of, oh, thanks to the internet, anyone can listen to the conversations over smartphones. Yes, if you let the FBI man into your house. Hello, I am pizza delivery man. I just want to upgrade the firmware on television to deliver pizza. That's okay?
Yeah.
Of course it is.
We'll just sit here surrounded by bags of fertilizer and all plants at the White House.
Can I tell you what the Section 9 details were, to quote from the leak? Okay, so Section 9 basically places obligations on telecom operators to, and I quote again, to provide and maintain the capability to simultaneously intercept or obtain secondary data from communications relating to up to 1 in 10,000 of the persons to whom the telecommunications operator provides the telecommunications service to which the communications relate.
So
that's the active... You have to have capabilities for active real-time spying.
Yeah, so basically, you're in a town or a city, and they suspect that one person in that town is whatever, then they can collect data on the entire town.
Yeah, well, only if the entire town is with the big telco. So if you've got somebody, if your connections would be Sky, Virgin, BT, and unfortunately in our particular case, Plusnet, it's a big part of BT, TalkTalk, anyone big enough, basically anyone who's got subscriber numbers over a certain size, because I was talking to someone at work and they said basically, like, if you're with a small ISP, they're not actually obligated. Like, if their subscriber numbers are under a certain amount, they're not obligated to comply. But then there's not that many small ISPs that are actually available for much of the country. This is where my paranoia in the run-up to the IP Act was, like, finding a VPN that works for me. Basically, I just want to point out that most reliable VPNs do tend to be ones that you pay for. It's not something you kind of unfortunately take on for free,
because the amount of traffic and the amount of work and maintenance.
Yeah.
Yep.
And never use Hola, for fuck's sake. Ever. It's over a year or two since we talked about the mess that was Hola, and basically sort of like just all the spying on people's exit notes and shit. But yeah, no, do not use Hola. And obviously, like, you have to have a VPN that is at system level, not just something that's running in your browser. Really, you need something that's kind of helping you cloak everything.
I can recall reading Hackaday. There's been talk of a lot of open firmwares for routers.
Yeah.
And, of course, that's how most people would prefer to do it, so that your router, which is plugged into the phone line, automatically takes care of all the VPN crap for you.
Yeah.
So if you connect to anything, you're covered. That's it. You know, you don't have to, type something into or, run a plugin or anything like that. But the manufacturers are sort of cracking down on the idea of that under the guise of, and the possible legitimate concern of, if it's open source, then anyone can look at the code and prod a hole. But of course, on the flip side, if it's open source, anyone can look at the code, poke a hole, and someone else can say, well, let's fix that.
Yeah. And the shitty thing is that's like router and modem manufacturers acting like their shit's good. Like, the amount of times when it's been easy to, like, just get past any password requirements on these things, and those sort of security flaws have been leaked, is pretty high.
The number of times I've read about there's an exploit or, whatever, in some consumer goods, and it's usually something blindingly simple. Like, it's not a joke to say there are some routers out there that are You know, their passwords are 1234, 1234. Or, you know, what's the password? It's the password. Or test.
I mean,
something
like that. And it's just awful.
I just want to point out, though, before anyone goes running off to buy their own self-supplied sort of router and modem so they can do all this kind of thing, they need to make sure that it works with British internet connections, because, well, not everyone's on... Like, it has, for most people, it needs to work with fibre to cabinet, so ADSL2 style connections. So, and not all routers do that. Like, you would have to buy from a UK seller to be reasonably sure that it's going to work on the kind of connection that you've got. But yeah, I can't. I have to admit, I do kind of want to put a VPN on at that level. But
you're slightly more paranoidish.
Yeah.
Probably because you know the capabilities of, you know, what this can entail.
Yeah.
But also because you just really slightly paranoid.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's okay. It's okay.
But like I said, you just have to look at our press. You have to look at Breitbart and Trump and such in the US and just see how that's going. With the, oh, if anyone doesn't agree with them, then it's fake news. And the mysterious hacking of Macron in France over the weekend.
Mm.
So really, another opponent of a fascist candidate gets hacked, and WikiLeaks points it out. How weird. If only there was a conclusion I could draw about, you know, the shitty politics of, you know, Assange and WikiLeaks in general.
Hmm. I mean, at one point, I was wondering whether, like, WikiLeaks was actually good in that, you know, it kind of exploited, like, secrets and whatnot from governments and, you know, to the extent where it's, like, you know, you need more government transparency to, you know who's being a dick and who's not. But apparently, no. No, apparently they are, yeah. Just, you know.
Well, they went from, yes, you need transparency, you know, when there's something shitty being covered up, but then there's being shitty by just obfuscation.
Hmm.
You know, the whole, you know, going back to, even if something's not technically illegal or dodgy, they can, just the fact that we've got all these documents and we can search through them.
Hmm.
Not all leaks are bad or good, but it's very suspicious that it was, say, Hillary Clinton who got hacked.
Yeah.
And not Trump. And in this case, it was, you know, Macron, who's the sort of, you know, centrist candidate who got hacked, and not Le Pen of the far right National Front. It's just, it's very, very suspicious that it's not a universal thing.
I mean, another factor involved is that obviously they're, in essence, kind of collecting data on you. What stops them from altering that data?
Yeah.
It also depends on, like, it depends on what the data is, because some types of things you can't really spoof. But
I mean, if they're collecting data in whatever database or whatever, then whatever they say you did is officially what you did, if you know what I mean. Or am I going too far down the rabbit hole there?
Well, it can be the smoke.
Mm.
You don't have to reveal anything dodgy going on. You just have to make it look and smell like there's something dodgy going on. And a lot of people will be more than happy with that.
Yeah.
Of course, I don't know if this is a good point to sort of like point out that if you are stopped by the police in this country, suspected of a crime, they have every right to take away your personal electronic devices and search the crap out of them. And while you obviously would hopefully not have anything like child porn on it, if you just happen to have in your cache bits of porn that don't comply with the very restrictive porn laws that we had come in a few years ago, which pretty much, you know, means that, I don't know, say, stuff to do with spanking or face-sitting and a few other non-dangerous acts.
It's pretty much, they watched the bits, you know, the jokes about, I think there's at least 2 points in, say, Family Guy, not that you know, I've watched much of it, but I know they've made jokes about British porn.
Yeah.
But, well done. You know, I'd point of climax and things like that. If it's not incredibly vanilla, then there is something somewhere that you know, says it's probably wrong.
But the problem is that even if you haven't made that stuff yourself, like, it's amateur stuff you've made of yourself and your partner, or if it's stuff that you've viewed by going onto a website and it isn't your stuff.
Or it's appeared in a banner.
Yeah.
Or
it's, if it's
there.
If it's cached on your system, that can be seen as a intent to distribute. And so that's, you know, like, how you might, you know, basically, if you've got bits of this sort of thing on your system, you know, and why am I bringing this up in the case of this? Well, this is just showing how far the privacy laws have descended in the past few years. Also, just our porn laws. Our porn laws are absolute shite at the moment. And pretty fucking draconian, which is, you know, sad.
Well, I mean,
sad.
Quite frankly, it's a case of, if you wouldn't let a stranger into your house, why would you let, you know, the government?
Into your internet history.
Yeah, I mean, without kind of an adequate explanation as to why they're investigating you, without, like, a warrant or anything.
But that's the thing, they want to be able to just collate lots and lots of data and lots of people at the same time and shittily analyse it, I want to point out. When actually, when the real, I would say probably like, the real intel that you can get against terrorists and child pornographers and that, apart from the fact that they're hanging around on the dark web, which means that really you need people of your own snooping around the dark web, finding out where all the cool sites are, and then running from with intelligence from that, but also having people physically in these communities, you know, doing regular old-style spying. Seems weird, but it works.
And that's the stuff that works. That's the stuff that works, and that's the stuff that they are already doing.
Yeah, but they don't want to pay for as many feet on the streets and stuff, you know, bodies out there. And it's just, and they think that they can solve all of this by tech, which I want to point out, a lot of the time, the people that are providing them with the actual tech to do this actual analysis are probably overcharging them for, when they could just be employing more officers, intelligence agents out there in communities that might be at risk of having individuals potentially commit offences. Or, you know, just investigating where all the really stupid, nasty shit is going on, which is the dark web. It's not, you know, it wouldn't take anyone very long to get onto a slightly dubious corner of the dark web if they've got a Tor browser going on.
Even then, there's certain, you know, threats that, you know, number crunching won't, you know, work with, and you'd have to end up going with
some
humans.
Human intelligence.
Yeah. You know, say, for example, just replacing one word with another.
Well, you say human intelligence, but human intelligence is what unfortunately led to the poor prosecution of one man over tiger pornography, which turned out not to be tiger
True.
Pornography. It was a porn actor dressed in a Frosty's Tony the Tiger costume who, whilst engaging in acts with a lady, went on to say they're great or whatever. So, and this went to and this was pretty much this
I
was
heard about this.
Gone to court.
Yeah.
You know, so this is, I mean, the way porn's being handled alone.
Frosted Flakes.
Oh god, the way porn is being handled alone in this country at the moment, and prosecutions over that is enough to make, I think, you should just realise just how shit this government, the law enforcement agencies that this government runs, are so shite at dealing with electronic intelligence, and also the fact that unfortunately things like the Paris attacks, which happened in the last obviously several times over the years lately, a lot of that's been organised through stuff like text messaging, and
which is as open to, you know, spying on as pretty much standing outside of the, you know, police station and saying, "Are we going to do crime?" Yes.
So, you know, why?
And also, can I just say that, you know, that whole thing with the, you know, the tiger porn and the, you know, the wearing the, you know, the,
yeah,
you know, Tony the Tiger costume,
yeah,
that raises more questions than he does answers, really. It's just, okay, fine, but how could anyone think that was Tiger?
Unfortunately, elements of our fine police forces in this country and the Crown Prosecution Service are not always, you know, with it.
I mean,
it's kind of, you know, think of, you know, everyone's got that clueless friend or relative. You know, it's the old, you know, I want to say, you know, imagine your grandparents, but, you know, some people have got savvy grandparents, but, you know, imagine, you know, the most technically illiterate, clueless, closeted friend, relative, acquaintance, whatever. And imagine they're the ones who are making the decisions on crap like this.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. No.
And that's pretty much what you end up getting, because it's, you know, it's rarely the people, you know, when it comes to all this security stuff, it's not someone who's sitting there saying, yes, I've been coding, you know, on the, you know, the kernel level, you know, really bashing the hardware and stuff. I know encryption inside and out. It's usually someone saying, these computers seem jolly fun. Do you think we can watch people through their televisions?
I was just going to.
That's kind of how all the legislation goes, yeah. Because it's like, wouldn't it be nice? And you go, well, could we do this? And someone has to go, maybe, but not like what you said. Go and do it. Oh,
I mean, I'd say that, you know, these kind of measures, obviously, they're kind of meant to attempt to stop people from, you know, even attempting to do anything, and it's like, it doesn't work, you know, having that kind of, if you do this, then we're going to find out and we're, you know, going to punish you type thing, really doesn't fucking work. You know, if it did, then, you know, we wouldn't, or, you know, America wouldn't have the death penalty because, you know, they wouldn't do anything wrong in case they got killed.
And there would have been no such thing as crime or anything like that in the Eastern Bloc states or, you know, East Germany or, you know, there'd be, and of course, North Korea would be a utopia.
Yeah, it just doesn't work having the philosophy of, you know, sort of like, do this and we're going to do bad stuff to you.
Yeah.
Yeah. I suppose with what little time we've got left, let's go talk about something happier, at least I hope, and what people have been up to.
Let's go to our happy places.
Retroid. Go for it.
Well, have
you been spying on citizens?
Always.
Using his old telly in the loft.
Yeah. I turn it to the wall and look in a mirror and I can see in. But I've taken a break from torturing poor ZX Spectrums with nails. As in literally nails, because before I got some, you know, videos plugs, I was putting nails into the video ports so I could get signals out of them. They're metal. It works. It's not torture.
Yeah.
And it's only Spectrums anyway, so who really cares? But I've taken a break from that because I'm waiting for bits. Now, yeah. I was browsing around on eBay, which will shock no one at all.
That's a dangerous habit of yours.
It's a very dangerous habit. I've added a lot of searches to my profile, and yeah, it's just, this could be bad. But I wasn't actually searching for this little gadget called the SD to IEC. IEC is the port and protocol which the Commodore 64 uses to load data off its disk drives. Now, what it describes is the Commodore 64, released in 1983, the number one selling home computer model in the world. Official record is around about 30 million.
Yeah.
But American computer, but mostly most successful in the UK, Germany, and, you know, some other related parts of Europe. It had a 5.25-inch floppy disk drive, which you could kill a man with, or yes. probably rent it out as a small London apartment for about 200,000.
Wow.
They were big. They were big bastards and heavy. They were full of electronics and hamsters and treadmills and everything.
It made the IME zip drive look compact.
Yes, that looked positively micro SD card sized in comparison with, you know, these. But of course, we had 5 1/4 inch floppy disks, which
we
were
did.
All, those are the only floppy disks that counted, because they, you know, there's the sort of classic one. Screw 3 1/2 inch floppies; they're crap. Anyway. So the disk drives were big, and of course, lots of mechanical parts. They fail; they're expensive to get. I happen to have 3, so that's not a problem. But they're big. Did I mention they're big?
No.
And of course, there's a difficulty in trying to get floppy disks that work that you can, save things onto, and you go, oh Jesus, all that kind of thing. So SD to IEC is an interface which plugs into the disk drive socket at the back of the Commodore 64, and can read SD cards. Not only that, but you can put floppy disk images that are, people have dumped, all created from scratch, because there's still a lot of homebrew software, and there are games being published for it even now by enthusiasts and little companies that keep the cottage industry going. And you can put disk images of various different kinds, because I won't go into the specifics, but yeah. Anyway, some of them have got larger capacities than others, and that can be handy so you can avoid, swapping disks. You can browse around on the Commodore 64 using the Commodore 64 keyboard with a Commodore 64 joystick nearby, so you're using it on the real hardware. You can browse around, choose the disk image, tell it to load, and it will do so just as it would do on the real hardware, pretty much. And it's glorious. It's a really beautiful thing to be able to play games that I was playing either in the 80s or some of the newer ones that have been released within the last few years. And now I can play them on my Commodore 64 on the TV. And of course, because it's an SD card, it does mean that I'm saving wear and tear on my original, disk drives.
Very true.
So it's saving a lot of space. It's saving power. Because those things, yeah. Yeah, Commodore 64 floppy disk drives were almost computers in their own right. They had a ridiculous amount of hardware in them for what they did. But yeah, it means I've got a 4 GB SD card, which was one of the lowest capacities that we had in the house.
Yeah.
And I've copied all my carefully sorted games that I've crafted and put together over the years, my disk image collection and cartridges and tapes and all that kind of thing, and copied them over, and I've got about 3.5 GB free on the card.
Doesn't surprise me in the least.
Yeah, the beautiful thing is the disk drive can work on several Commodore models. So if I wanted to, I could fetch my VIC-20 out of my loft, or my Commodore 16. And I could have their games on that card as well, plug this little, gadget into the back of them, and I'm away. I can load their games as well and play them on, their real hardware. So it's a fantastic little example of you use something new. I've got a feeling that it's got a microcontroller, on the card, because it's a relatively tiny thing, but it fits snugly right up against the back of the Commodore 64. I've got a feeling that the micro SD, the microcontroller for the SD card, etc., is probably more powerful than the Commodore 64 it's plugged into. Just because microcontrollers are ridiculously powerful in comparison with the hardware that we had in the 80s. Yeah. Just to do a few simple things. So, yeah, I'm going to look forward to playing about with that more. But I've been very busy getting disk images and tape images and program dumps of games that I own on tape. But of course,
rather than sit there with a tape deck and hope that this 30-odd-year-old tape has survived against the odds, I can just get a pristine digital image, load that instead, play on the original hardware. What more could you want?
Pretty cool.
Yes, I've been nerding and I am old.
I like that. Sounds good to me.
Okay, Cookie?
Hello.
Should Cookie go next?
Am I? Oh, okay. Not a lot, to be fair, but I have been watching Sense8.
We've only done the New Year's, so we haven't seen any of the proper second season yet. Just the 2 hour. Sorry,
it was episode one.
Yeah, that was Cluster's episode one of season two.
Yeah.
Well, we watched that, which was like the 2 hour episode.
Yes,
which is really good.
Very, very good. But it gets better.
Oh,
it does get better.
Don't spoil it.
We've just got to a point where a face who is familiar to certain British sci-fi has suddenly popped up.
Yes. And it is amazing, but I won't spoil it for Mr. Blue.
Okay, thank you.
I'll just grab the metaphorical mic here, and I'll say that we've watched about the first three episodes of Handmaid's Tale via Dave Internet.
Handmaid's Tale.
Yeah.
I've heard of it, but I obviously haven't seen it. Is it actually on any legitimate way of, watching it in the UK?
Are you saying Dave Internet isn't legitimate?
No, I'm just saying, if it's
conversation half an hour ago.
I'm just saying that if
there are rumours that Amazon in the UK may pick it up, and I really hope that they do.
Cool.
Very quick summary. It's set in the near future when the fertility rates have plummeted, and as a result, the United States has pretty much collapsed and turned into a very religious dogmatic state where any fertile women are drafted to become handmaids, and they bear the children of the elite.
Mm.
And let me just say, watching it with Trump and his Tea Party buddies in charge of the US. Yeah, Jesus, it's a grim watch. It's excellent, but fucking hell, it's grim.
I have actually read the novel it's based on by Margaret Atwood.
Yeah, we've watched up until episode three, and the end of that one was just I think we need like a musical comedy or something to watch after that and some gin.
It does slightly remind me of an episode of Sliders, but the reverse. Where there's like, only a handful of men left.
Oh yeah,
and loads
I do
and loads
actually
of women.
Remember the episode you mean? Yes.
Yeah.
And the authorities in that one catch them because of course the men leave the toilet seat up.
Yeah.
I remember that because it's like, oh yeah, I suppose makes sense.
Well, you could have been like, hey, I was just washing the bowl when you interrupted me.
Legit.
Very true.
This story checks out. but yeah, there are 10 episodes in the first because IMDb was a little bit iffy about the numbers and such. But there's going to be about 10 episodes, and they're only up to about episode 4 or 5 of Handmaid's Tale. And yeah, it's very good, but
incredibly depressing.
Yes.
There's a lot of that going around. A lot of dystopia type stuff.
I mean, we've just talked about one dystopian element anyway, so...
Yeah. But, that's part of the reason why I like Sense8, because it is so hopeful.
Yes.
Although, I did notice that the Wachowskis did have to have a rave in it.
Oh, yeah.
Well, but of course...
Yeah, and it's just...
But I do remember that one scene where, you know, obviously they're all connected, and the way that they shoot it is that all of the characters are in the one character space and whatnot. So it's yes, quite yes. interesting the way that, you know, they're all dancing in the prison cell.
Yeah.
It's just like, that's kind of cool.
I quite liked the way that they, you know, they're sort of continuing to develop on, you know, on that with them sharing a space, or, you know, being able to kind of take over.
Mm. Yes.
Each, you know, each one according to their ability, but yes.
Kind of makes me want to be part of like a block like that.
Yeah. I'll shoot.
Okay. Yeah. Cookie. Yes.
That's cool. That was all I had to say about it, because I wasn't going to spoil it for you.
Okay. Emily?
Okay, so seeing the seeing episode 2 now of American Gods after today.
That's very intense.
Yeah, extremely intense. Still really enjoying it. Mm. We've watched a few episodes of Preacher now.
Yeah.
Still enjoying that. We've also watched a few episodes of Lucifer now. Really getting into that.
Which season?
We're only on season 1.
Oh, okay. Come back when you're on season 2.
Favorite, yeah, favourite series on TV at the moment.
Hmm.
Definitely.
Which will probably mean it gets cancelled. Fox like what it is about it.
No, they've renewed it for season 3, and they've given it extended season 3.
Ooh.
That's why season 2 is going to be a little bit shorter.
I thought that was just because they're bastards.
No, they've actually given them an extended season 3,
oh,
which is cool.
That makes me a happy.
I thought that might.
I do like my Lucy.
Yes.
Even if they did make it into a like a semi procedural cop show, but I'll let them off.
Obviously, I watched more Supernatural the past week. UK episode, which one was that? UK episode was episode 18 of season 12 last week, and that involves a suspected pagan god doing shizzle. It was kind of a grim episode, and certainly can put you off your food a little bit. There was also an issue with Vario stereotyped British spy jazz, perhaps popularised by the likes of Austin Powers movies, that is used through parts of the episode relating to British Men of Letters, and it's just this cheesy annoyingness that we could have done without.
If they would have just chosen like different music,
it might have been all right. It might have been better, but then I don't think we actually needed to be showed what the British Men of Letters were trying to achieve. We could have just had a couple of frames near the end to show that obviously someone had been there, and it would have been far more ominous and in keeping with what the British Men of Letters are actually getting up to in season 12.
So you know what though?
What?
I've just been distracted through all that, just imagining what British spy jars would sound like.
It's, you know, Thingamabob game, the where you try to stop nuclear weapons from launching. It's like side scroll.
Oh yes, yes, yes. PS4 and was it Vita as well?
Yeah.
Yes.
Can't remember the name. We've talked about it before, but I really can't remember the name right now. I'm blocking on it.
It's kind of cell shaded and.
Yeah, it was similar-ish music to that, but even jazzier.
Wow.
Yeah.
Cool.
That's some illicit jazz.
Yeah. there was that going on. And that was the UK episode, but the American episode last week was 12/20. They're seriously gearing up for season finale now. I'm just looking at my calendar, which is currently on Cassiel for May. So this week's episode is episode 21. And then next week in America, they've got a 2-episode special back-to-back to end the season. So we've got 3 episodes of the season left. Episode 20 was setting up basically kind of like by the end of it for the rest of the season. I have no idea how things are going to go down at the moment, whether certain characters are going to survive the end of the season. It's gotten interesting.
It's looking a little interesting for some of them, isn't it?
Yeah, I would say some.
Not being specific.
Yeah, some characters have definitely got their necks on the line.
We've caught up with iZombie.
Oh yeah, we caught up with iZombie. So that's interesting, but because we're in season three of that at the moment, and season three is currently airing in the US as well, so it's, you know, it's like episode a week out on CW, then we get an episode on Netflix here.
You've got like iZombie and Santa Clarita Diet. Is there kind of like a zombies are not necessarily bad and shuffly type thing going on at the moment?
Well, it's a complete contrast to what we've had with The Walking Dead for years.
Yeah.
And Fear the Walking Dead.
Yeah.
So it makes sense that maybe someone would try something different if they're going to do zombies.
Expanding the concept, really.
A bit like we had with vampires.
Yeah.
Yes.
Absolutely. That one's going. I quite enjoy iZombie. I mean, it's obviously still kind of death and eating brains and stuff like that. But there's a levity to it. There's kind of a lightness to it. That's
it is TV bubblegum.
Yeah, yeah.
But it's enjoyable.
Yeah, but I mean, it's great contrast to stuff like American Gods, which is quite. It feels heavy and dense and, you know, absolutely brilliant, but by the same token, you know, I can imagine people like getting a bit depressed if they kind of just jump from, like, you know, broody serious to broody serious to broody serious.
Oh god, I'm so depressed watching American Gods. I'll watch this. Oh, what's it? Handmaid's Tale. Jesus.
Also, Doctor Who over the weekend.
Yeah, Doctor Who.
Another not shit one.
Yeah, it was suitably fucking creepy. And also felt like it was a sort of like a take on current rental or generation rent.
Absolutely. I think this season especially has tried to envelop more of, you know, what is kind of happening with the world at the moment, kind of thing, you know, with like the rental prices in London, and, you know, making a commentary on that, and I think emojis and, you know, stuff like that, and commentary on that, and then punching Nazis and commentary on that.
Yes,
definitely feels like Doctor Who of this year, as it were.
Yeah,
It's only been a very strong season.
Yeah, why couldn't they have done this for the last two?
Well,
who knows?
I think that is, other than like messing around with VPN and shit, I think that's everything I've been up to.
Okay, not really got too much more to add. Mario Kart 8, been playing that, trying to unlock the bit of stuff which is still locked in there when you first begin to play, because I think pretty much like all of the characters and all of the tracks and all of the CCs are unlocked from the get-go. So the only things to unlock are the, you know, car parts and Golden Mario, which I haven't tried unlocking Golden Mario yet, because you have to, I think it's get a gold on all cups on 200cc.
Good deal.
Yeah,
you were cursing the mirror track somewhat as well.
I, to be honest, I actually did those far easier than I thought that they were going to be. I'm not sure why exactly, but yeah, that they were easier than I thought. Maybe cool. I was just, you know, psyching myself up to lose, and I didn't. Let's see, anything else? Did we mention about Bill Nye the Science Guy and his?
Yeah, we did last week.
Yeah, we did last week. So I finished the rest of that. That had a very good episode. Well, obviously, most of the episodes are really good. And, you know, Bill Nye himself, you know, kind of admits that research into stuff has kind of changed his mind a lot. Say, for example, his episode on sexuality and identity and gender. That one actually, I think, took him by surprise. And, you know, he kind of came up, came to the conclusion that it's far less static and far less basic and binary than, you know, what people get taught in school.
Which annoyed the right people. So
absolutely, absolutely.
I've still not watched that, but I'm going to have to.
Oh, even if it's just that one episode. I mean, all the episodes are good, and they're done in such a kind of tongue-in-cheek kind of, almost like he's kind of doing an adult version of, well, whatever his show was like originally. Because obviously, it was originally for kids, so he's still got that, you know, kind of energy of kind of almost like talking to kids, but you know, he recognises that he's talking to adults, and, you know, obviously things are a bit more kind of complicated and whatnot.
Now, this is one of those, it will probably fly past you two because you're bastards. But Cookie might know what I'm talking about. It kind of sounds like Johnny Ball.
Johnny Ball?
Yeah.
Johnny Ball. Johnny Ball?
Johnny Ball, as in ball.
Yes, as in ball, yeah. Zoe Ball's dad.
Yes, yes, yes.
Yes.
Because he would do very good, accessible, you know, for kids science programs on, you know, on the beam. And it got, you know, progressively a bit, you know, later on. But, you know, as in just not as enthusiastic. But, yeah, he was very good at explaining, you know, basic science and, you know, chemistry, physics, biology, you know, all those kinds of things on, you know, on kids' TV. Mm. And that's what Bill Nye kind of reminds me of, you know, the bits I've seen.
Mm.
So, do either of you know what or who I'm talking about?
Yeah, I remember. I remember because he was he. Did he help start How It Works or not?
Yes.
Because I used to watch How It Works.
Oh well, there we go. That was a continuation of the, you know, the kind of thing. So it was, you know, accessible science.
Yeah, reminds me of was it How To with Carol Vorderman and a couple of the other presenters. Yep.
Yes.
Yeah.
Which of course was a continuation of the original series How.
Hmm.
Yes.
But yeah, I think because I mean, when you kind of
how dare not you that I've so you're so much younger.
Not that you know, I've kind of looked at the TV schedule recently, but is there much in the way of, you know, kind of science programs for kids in that respect anymore?
Don't think so.
Yeah, I honestly don't know, because why the hell would I look at kids TV?
fair point. I know, all I know is that kids are getting taught coding.
Well, they're getting taught stuff like Scratch, mostly, and a few other things.
Oh, the horrors of your brother's school.
Well, I feel like that is more than needs to be discussed on a geeky podcast. But if you want another reason not to vote Tory, the present state of our school system is perhaps another reason not to vote Tory in June.
Because can we just kind of say what is the issue?
No.
Okay.
The general issue is underfunding, but underfunding to the extent that entire areas of study could be closed at one major secondary school in the county.
Oh, that's nicely horrifying.
Yes.
And not exactly, you know, kind of an outlier subject either. I mean, it's not like a, you know, math science English kind of thing, but it is kind of some of the secondary subjects, as it were.
Yeah.
Crazy.
Which is very worrying. But yeah.
The kind of secondary subjects that would help us to, like, you know, as a nation, to survive Brexit and be able to trade with the rest of the world.
Now, why would we want that when we're all going to be down the mines again?
You think there's going to be a mining job after this?
Well, they've been digging for the last year. They might as well keep digging.
I don't think we have any, Tory listeners, but just in case.
Well, so they just stop voting for them. The bad news.
And it's not because we're like all dyed in the wool Labour. It's just where whoever is closest to our, own personal.
If nothing else, the main topic of discussion for this episode should be a reason to vote otherwise.
I just want to point out that I wouldn't Labour does not come up all rosy and peachy in the context of today's episode discussion, because unfortunately, dear listeners, whilst all of this IP Act was going on and being run through government over the last few years, Labour failed to actually oppose the measures.
Yeah, so that's something I was thinking, but I didn't get around to mentioning that. They voted for this as well.
Yeah. Yeah.
So it's like, oh, we're the proper opposition, says the opposition party that happens to vote all the shit that I hate through from this government.
So yeah, there's a lovely episode, lovely ending note in the with less than.
I'm just off to watch Handmaid's Tale to cheer myself up.
So that's all we've got time for this week. So it is good night from.
It's good night from me, Paul Wood, and Retroid on Eurogamer.net and Super Retroid on Twitter.
Yeah, and it's good night for me, Paul, aka OneArmed_Cookie, who's still optimistic for the future.
Lies.
It's good night from me, Paul Blewett, and I'm on Twitter as @PaulBlewett.
And it's good night from me, Emily King. You can find me on Twitter @EK6891. You can also find me on the Mastodon instance of witches.town as EK6891 if you are now a Mastodon user like I have been for the last few weeks and want somebody to follow. Just saying.
So for our listeners, what is Mastodon?
Mastodon
isn't that a dinosaur?
Mastodon's a decentralized social network that is like Twitter and IRC had a baby.
Oh, right, okay. Cool.
Less
ASL.
You can find notes for this episode over at nerdassemble.co.uk. You can find us on Twitter @NerdsPodcast. We're on Facebook and Google Plus as Nerds Assemble Podcast. We're also available on Stitcher and iTunes. And we might have a guest next week. We might be talking about indie games next week. We were gonna be hopeful on this. So good night.
Good night.
Good night.
Nice and airy and creepy there.